वैष्णवृंद की नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गिराधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राध कुंद गिरि गोविधाम की ब्रज भूमि श्री वृंदावन धाम की श्री मायापुर नवदीप धाम की श्री जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की गंगा माई की जमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की समवेत भक्तवृंद की Jaini Tago Premanande, all glories to the Simmer devotees. All glories to the Simmer devotees. All glories to the Simmer devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, before I begin speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, I'd like to request the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, specifically my uncles and aunties, my brothers and godbrothers and godsisters of my spiritual master, and all of you, please, without the well wishes of the devotees, there is no question of success in spiritual life. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we'll be reading from the fourth canto, chapter 19, text 27 to 32 is on the board. Chapter entitled King Prithu's 100 horses horse sacrifice. This is text 27. Tam ritvija sakravada visanditam vichakshadus prekshamasasya ranghasa nivarayam asuraho mahamate. When the priests and all the others saw Maharaj Prithu very angry and prepared to kill Indra, they requested him, "O great soul, do not kill him, for only sacrificial animals can be killed in a sacrifice." Such are the directions given by Shastra. There's a purport here. Animal killing is intended for different purposes. It tests the proper pronunciation of Vedic mantras, and an animal being put into the sacrificial fire should come out with a new life. No one should ever be killed in a sacrifice meant for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. How then could Indra be killed when he is actually worshipped in the yajna and accepted as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Therefore the priests requested King Prithu not to kill him. Text 28. Vayam marutpantam ihatanasanam yad vayamahe tvachavasahattisham ayatayamo pahavenantaram vasaya rajam juhavamateitam. Dear King, Indra's powers are already reduced due to his attempt to impede the execution of your sacrifice. We shall call him by Vedic mantras, which were never before used, and certainly he will come. Thus, by the power of our mantra, we shall cast him into the fire, because he is your enemy. There's also a purport to this verse. By chanting the Vedic mantras properly in a sacrifice, one can perform many wonderful things. In Kali Yuga, however, there are no qualified brahmanas who can chant the mantras properly. Consequently, no attempt should be made to perform such big sacrifices. In this age, the only sacrifice recommended is the Sankirtan movement. Text 29. Ityamantriya katutatin vidarasyati vijjarusha shubhastan jubato vyatya swayambhu patyasha pratyachedata. My dear Vidura, after giving the king this advice, the priests who had been engaged in performing the sacrifice called for Indra, the king of heaven, in a mood of great anger. When they were just ready to put the oblation in the fire, Lord Brahma appeared on the scene and forbade them to start the sacrifice. Text 30. Na bhagyo bhagatan indro yad yajyo bhagavatanu yam jigam sata yagena yasyastas tanava shura. Lord Brahma addressed them thus: my dear sacrificial performers, you cannot kill Indra, the king of heaven. It is not your duty. You should know that Indra is as good as the supreme personality of Godhead. Indeed, he is one of the most powerful assistants of the personality of Godhead. You are trying to satisfy all the demigods by the performance of this yajna, but you should know that all these demigods are but part and parcels of Indra, the king of heaven. How then can you kill him in this great sacrifice? Text 31. Tad idam paschatamah dharma vyatikaram vijah indina nushkitam raja karmata karmaita vijigam sata. In order to make trouble and impede the performance of King Prithu's great sacrifice, King Indra had adopted some means that in the future will destroy the clear path of religious life. I draw your attention to this fact. If you oppose him any further, he will further misuse his power and introduce many other irreligious systems. Now we go on to today's verse. Text 32.
Pritu kite pito bhuya. Pritu kite pito bhuya. Karye ko na shata kvatuhu. Karye ko na shata kvatuhu. Kalanthe kratu bhi shvishtai. Alante kratu bhi shvishtai. Yad bhavan moksha dharmavit. Yad bhavan moksha dharmavit. Pritu kite pito bhuya. Karya kona shata kratuhu. Alante kratu bhi shvishtai. Yad bhavan moksha dharmavit.
Prabhus.
Pitu kite pito bhuya. Karye ko na shata kratu. Alante kratu bhi shvishtai. Yad bhavan moksha dharmavi. Pitu kite pito bhuya. Karye ko na shata kratu. Alante kratu bhi shvishtai. Yad bhavan moksha dharmavit. Pritu kite prito bhuyat.
Matjis,
pito kete pito bhuya, kahe kona shata kutu, alante kratu bhi shvishtai. Yad bhavan moksha dharmavit. Prito kite prito bhuyat. Karye ko na shata kratu. Yante kratu bhi shvishtai.
यद् भगवान् मोक्षधाम नवी पितुर्कीर्ते पितो भूयात् कार्ये कौन शता क्रतुः Pitukite of wide renown, Pito of King Pritu, Bhuyat, let it be, Tarhi, therefore, Eka Una Shatakratuhu, he who performed 99 Yajnas, Alam, there is nothing to be gained. Te of you, Kratubihi, by performing sacrifices. Su Ishtai, well performed. Yat, because Bhavan, yourself, Moksha Dharmavit, the knower of the path of liberation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Abhay Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Pritu, Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned towards Maharaj Pritu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices? Please repeat responsively. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Pritu, Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned towards Maharaj Pritu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices? Purport. Lord Brahma came down to pacify King Pritu regarding his continual performance of 100 sacrifices. King Pritu was determined to perform 100 sacrifices, and Lord Indra took this very seriously because Indra himself was known as the performer of 100 sacrifices. Just as it is the nature of all living entities within this material world to become envious of their competitors, King Indra, although King of Heaven, was also envious of King Pritu and therefore wanted to stop him from performing 100 sacrifices. Actually, there was a great competition, and King Indra, to satisfy his senses, began to invent so many irreligious systems to obstruct King Pritu. To stop these irreligious inventions, Lord Brahma personally appeared in the sacrificial arena. As far as Maharaj Pritu was concerned, he was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it was not necessary for him to perform the prescribed Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Such ceremonies are known as karma, and there is no need for the devotee in the transcendental position to execute them. As the ideal king, however, it was King Pritu's duty to perform sacrifices. A compromise was therefore to be worked out. By the blessings of Lord Brahma, King Pritu would become more famous than King Indra. Thus, Pritu's determination to perform 100 sacrifices was indirectly fulfilled by the blessings of Lord Brahma. Pritu kite pito bhuya karyakona satakratuhu alam tikratu bhishvistai yad bhavan moksha dharmavit. Let there be only 99 sacrificial performances for Maharaj Pritu, Lord Brahma concluded. Lord Brahma then turned towards Maharaj Pitu and informed him that since he was thoroughly aware of the path of liberation, what was the use in performing more sacrifices?
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjala Shalakaya Chakchuran Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Tadati Svapadampikam Pancha Kalpaturubhyascha Pita Sindhu Vyairacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktavanda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pushtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Chaitanya Swaminiti Namine Namami Bhakti Chaitanya Prabhupadana Sevanam Shri Vrajadhana Mahatmyam Padashatam Kupavanam Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pushtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nidvishesha Shunyavati Krishna So His Holiness Kadamakanana Maharaj said once in a Bhagavatam class in South Africa, when we make a mistake, it's all over the media. And when Indra makes a mistake, it's all over the Shastra. So in this regard, Maharaj Pitu's sacrificial performance was not intended for his personal benefit, but rather for the welfare of the citizens. In other words, he was not acting independently or selfishly in an unmotivated way. As such, he was faultless, and the fact that Indra opposed him in so many devious ways was unlawful. Indra's acts were prompted by a sense of envy. Now, if we consider Indra's position, King of Heaven, and in this purport it's explained how dear he is to the Supreme Lord, and he was affected by envy, we should take note of this and be cautious in our own dealings. Further proof of how cautious we should be in our dealings is mentioned later in this pastime, actually in chapter 20, the next chapter. There it is said that after the Supreme Lord descended into the sacrificial arena, Maharaj Pitu himself offered obeisances to Indra and acknowledged that he also was at fault. So in this case, it was a case of mutual envy. Because both of them were Vaishnavas, they decided to reconcile the situation by a compromise. And envy only exists between devotees because of a lack of Krishna consciousness. So this is a brief outline of some of the themes I'll attempt to share with you today, to discuss with you today. One is the broad heading of envy. The second one is a need to make compromises sometimes. And the third one is how careful you have to be in dealing with devotees. And an aspect here in terms of Maharaj Pitu is duty. Maharaj Pitu here, it is mentioned, performed his duty. So Prabhupada says in the purport of this verse that it is the nature of all living entities within this world to become envious of their competitors. So I thought of a classic example that we experience every year, a certain part of the year, as the kokilas. And the kokilas make a very loud call, starting low and then ascending. Should we attempt a demonstration? And then, till he or she can chant no longer. He has reached the end of his scale. But still, at that highest pitched voice of the kokila, it is straining to outdo the neighboring kokila. It's clearly some competitive nature being exhibited even amongst living entities, as Prabhupada mentions in this Prabhupada. The original cause of our incarceration in this material world is this envy. In the spiritual world, the focus of attention is Krishna. He's getting all worship, all attention, all honor, all respect. And that, if somebody is not in that similar mood of service to the Lord in the spiritual world, then a feeling of envy will be evoked. So we can safely conclude that our presence in this material world is symptomatic of the fact that of our original envy of the Lord in the spiritual world. And that stems from a competition with Krishna himself. So this tendency prevails even when we descend to the material world in terms of a sense of competition with other people, and that's described as a weakness of heart. This is explained in the 15th chapter, last verse, text 20. In the purport there, Prabhupada is saying that there's two weaknesses of heart. One is the desire to lord it over material nature, and the other is to be a master and controller and possessor of objects of material nature. In other words, aham mameti, I and mine, misidentifying oneself as the supreme enjoyer and trying to control and enjoy all things within one's environment. There's one nice story in this regard. Srila Prabhupada speaks of the organs of the body. So once, the organs of the body are thinking, having the Ishta Goshti amongst themselves and saying to each other, you know, we work so hard. I got to pick up the chapati, says the hand. The mouth says, I got to chew it. The esophagus is saying, I got to pass it down my passages. The legs are saying, I got to walk towards the chapati. So many body parts are complaining. But one personality, this stomach, is sitting and just accepting all of this food. It does nothing. So they says, we will have tools down. Strike. So they did like that. They stopped to supply the stomach with food. As a consequence, the bodily parts, namely the hand, the legs, the mouth, the esophagus, and all the bodily parts gradually started to weaken. And they found, oh, what's going on? We're lacking energy now. So they decided to take up the service of putting food into the stomach. Because only by supplying the stomach that all other parts get energy. A similar example is given in the Bhagavatam of the various parts of the tree being nourished once you water the root. So satisfaction of Krishna means watering the root or feeding the stomach. And automatically all parts of the tree are fed or watered, and automatically all parts of the body are fed. In the material world, competition is very rife. And I researched the definition of competition. And some synonyms for competition are rivalry and contest. And some examples given are of sport. Generally, people in the world, they're very much attached to some sport. And the competition, they put themselves in one team to verse the other team, or they support one player or one sports star, and in that way there's great competition. This is an extremely passionate engagement. And I was researching also the chapter 14 where Krishna describes passionate nature and the symptoms of passion. Krishna says in the 14th chapter, text 12, O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. We see all these aspects prominent in somebody who is in competition with others, wanting some result, very feverish hankering, endeavoring intensely. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj says in one lecture that in materialist society, people love it when others are envious of them. If others are envious of you, that means you must be doing something wonderful. So they get very excited. Others are envious of me. So what is the solution? We've discussed the problem of envy, but you know that in Krishna's instructions from the Shastra, that whenever there's some difficulty, some problem, he gives a solution. So the solution to this is to keep Krishna in the center. If we, like the bodies of the body parts, the organs of the body, recognize there's a need to supply the stomach, if we recognize that there's a need to surrender to Krishna and offer our respect, our honor, our worship and our activities to for His pleasure, we will be cured of this envious tendency. It begins with our relationship with Krishna, repairing that relationship. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's a nice description given of how the best purposes of the Vedas can be served. There's a nice analogy given by Krishna of many reservoirs and many wells and one big body of water, like a river. Usually in India, Prabhupada explains in one lecture, that there'll be a different reservoir to draw water for drinking, there'll be another well to draw water for cooking, maybe, or for washing your clothing, or for watering the plants like this. There's different reservoirs. But if you have one big river from which you can fetch this water, then all the purposes of those little reservoirs or wells can be served. So Krishna uses this example to explain that if one who understands the purpose behind the Vedas, all the little activities and sacrifices which are recommended in the Vedas are automatically performed by the person who knows the purpose behind them. In that purport, 246, Prabhupada says, the best purpose of Vedic culture is served, however, by chanting the holy name of the Lord as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of all fallen souls. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama eva kevalam, kalo naste, vanaste, vanaste eva gati anyatha. In this age of Kali, there is no other way, no other way, no other way for deliverance other than the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If we think there is another way, we are fooling ourselves very, very, very seriously. The living entity desired to enjoy separate of Krishna. Krishna says, okay, come to the material world and learn what it is to enjoy separately of me. Actually, no one is enjoying in this world. Everybody is suffering in different ways. It's a fool's paradise. That's why it's referred to by Krishna himself as Dukalayam Ashashvata, temporary and full of miseries. Some tinge of happiness exists in the material world, but that tinge may be compared to like a little payout from a gambling machine. I'm not sure how many of you are aware of a one-armed bandit. There's one gambling machine called a one-armed bandit. You pull a lever and then if you get a certain combination of fruits or flowers or numbers, you get some payout of cash, coins. So what keeps the gambler addicted to continuing with the gambling, although he loses? It's that little payout. In comparison to what he loses, it's insignificant. But still, that little payout is what keeps him coming back for more. So in a similar way, the material world is full of so much of adversity, so much of suffering in many, many ways. But because of a little seeming enjoyment, we are attached to that little enjoyment. Maharaj Prithu, it's explained here that does not have to perform sacrificial performances, being a devotee and transcendentally situated. But still he does it. Why is that? In chapter 3, text 17 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that there's no duty to perform for a person who understands what is the goal of life, if he is self-realized. Prabhupada says in the purport that if a person is fully Krishna conscious and is fully satisfied by acts in Krishna consciousness, he no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within his is instantly cleansed, and the effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. So this is the point of Lord Brahma. What is the need of you to perform these yajnas? You have got the ultimate goal. There's a nice analogy given by Srila Prabhupada of the elevator. The system of bhakti yoga is compared to an elevator. If you have, probably when you have the temple of the Vedic planetarium completed, there'll be one elevator there. When you have a very high building, to get to the top floor, let's say 50th floor, or sometimes in the West there's 80 floors, 100 floors even, to get to that top floor, you may take the stairs. No one will argue with you. You may be on some keep-fit drive, no problem. However, if the lift is there, if the elevator is there, why not use the lift? So this is the bhakti yoga process. Direct. You may take the step-by-step process, Prabhupada explains, this is acceptable also, it will get you to your destination, but if the lift is available there, why not take the lift? So Maharaj Prithu is established on this level of taking the lift. So somebody who knows that there is a lift, somebody who is practiced to take the lift, why should he take the stairs? This is the question by Brahma. Very logical. Makes a lot of sense. And there's a good answer for this. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the 21st to 26th verse, there's an explanation of why even a transcendentalist will perform activities. What is that? Yad yad acharati shrestas tatpat eva taro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokastat anuvartate. That for a transcendentalist, actually there's no need to perform these activities, but to set an example for the common folk, he performed these activities. Because whatever activities he performs, all the general people they follow. So in the purport, Prabhupada makes a very nice point about smoking. He says that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. And he says that one who smokes cannot teach in his lessons. Please do not smoke. My Guru Maharaj tells a very nice story in this regard. That when he was doing some sankirtan, collection for the building of a major temple in South Africa, Shishi Radha Radhanath, he was selling oil paintings at that time. And they were at one fair, which is like kind of like a mela, a fair. And in this fair, there were different stalls. And the stall that the Hare Krishna paintings were being sold at was next to a stall of a cancer awareness stall. Cancer awareness. So my Guru Maharaj and his Sankirtan partner were distributing the paintings, and they noticed that there's one young man who was preaching very vociferously, very strongly about the dangers of cancer and how aware you should be. They both are called cancer awareness. But my Guru Maharaj noticed that every 5 minutes this preacher seemed to disappear for 5 minutes. Then he came back. Then on one occasion my Guru Maharaj Sankirtan partner, his name is Ramanujacharya Prabhu, went to the gents, to the loo, and he happened to bump into this person as they came to a corner, ran into each other. And my Guru Maharaj's Sankirtan partner almost extinguished that person's cigarette. So this man, this preacher, was saying, cancer is so bad, it's so dangerous, be aware, be conscious, awareness program. He was every few minutes disappearing to the toilet to have a few puffs to smoke. So he cannot properly be, if the people in general know that he's smoking, they will not be inclined to follow such a person. So like this, it's important for the leader to be exemplary. This is the whole point of Maharaj Prithu following these rituals. we come back to the question, what is the solution if somebody is, has to be a perfect leader, somebody has to be free from envy? We have to make a compromise. In this situation, Prithu Maharaj, as a devotee, doesn't have to perform these sacrifices. But at the same time, to set an example, he has to perform. So there's a conflicting situation. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. What to do? As Prabhupada is suggesting, Prabhupada says there has to be a compromise. For whose sake? For the sake of the Lord. Sometimes we have to do a service that we are not entirely happy with. Sometimes we have to stay in a place or do something which we're not entirely happy with. Have you had such an experience? 1.5 people. Okay, if you've had such an experience, you can identify what I'm saying. You get an order from your spiritual master. And you really want to stay back in your home country and be with your parents and be with your friends. But he says, no, you go to this place and you do this. So, the mark of a true disciple is unquestioningly and ungrudgingly you accept the order of your spiritual master and you place it in your head. Janani Vasprabhu told me that I should place the instruction of my spiritual master as my worshipable deity. So by his grace and his blessings, I am trying to do that. It seemingly appears that Maharaj Prithu was not successful in his execution of the 100 sacrifices. How many did he perform? 99. It's like you watch cricket, you're counting down. 90, 91, 92, 93, 97, 99. Just play it past the slips and you get a sensory. But the fool cuts it, gets caught by one person in the slip court, out at 99. What a disappointment. All his endeavor to come to this point is lost. He has lost out on a century. You know, on the person's record, it doesn't say how many 99 run innings did he have. It says how many centuries did he have. So seemingly from the material calculation, Maharaj Prithu is a loser here. But Prabhupada says in the purport that indirectly his desire was fulfilled by the blessings of Lord Brahma. Why was his desire fulfilled by the blessings of Lord Brahma? Because he listened to the instruction of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma in this case is the Shiksha Guru of Prithu Maharaj. So we accept the orders of the spiritual master, although seemingly we may be losing, ultimately we will be the gainer. Because by the mercy of the spiritual master, one gains the mercy of Krishna. Without the mercy of the spiritual master, one cannot get the mercy of Krishna. There's one nice story I just read in Dandavats. Srila Indradyumna Swami Maharaj is doing some preaching in Russia, and he is accustomed to take very austere flights where the service is not so good, the aircraft is barely takes off into the air, and in so many ways the knee space is short. Of course, as you know, those of you that travel on buses in Mayapur, they were designed for Bengalis, people with very short femurs. So when I sit, I got to kind of stretch in a yogic position like this, and somehow I managed to fit. So you can imagine Indradyumna Swami is very tall personality. So he's someone who squeezes for many, many years Maharaj performed this austerity. And just recently he was treated to business class. And in this there's much more leg room and the service is improved. So in this way Maharaj is feeling a little happy and excited that he'll be able to travel for once a little more comfortably. And with him is his personal assistant, his servant, Uttama Shloka Prabhu, who comes often to Mayapur. So they're settling into their seat. Maharaj looks at his ticket, he settles down, and then Uttama Shloka is still sitting, standing up. So Maharaj says, no, you please sit. Then Uttama Shloka Prabhu points out, I have an economy class ticket, so I have to go to the other compartment in the plane where the leg room is much more restricted and the service is a lot less high class. And sure enough, within a few minutes, the owner of the seat comes across and shows his ticket stub. Excuse me, you're sitting in my seat, so leave. Then Uttamastaka thought, let me try and speak to this person. Maybe he can listen and be convinced to change seats. And he says, this is my spiritual master, my guru. I'd like to sit next to him and take care of his needs. And the man agreed. So for that journey, Uttamashloka Prabhu sat next to Indradyumna Swami for that journey. And they were treated to all sorts of wonderful things. Before the takeoff, they had a nice warm towel to wipe their hands, dab their face just to settle their nerves. Regular servings of fruit juices and a reclining seat perhaps. So many nice things in the business class. And all the while Indradyumna Swami is thinking about, what is this other man going through? He sacrificed this for us. Some credit will be there. And there was a discussion between Uttamashloka Prabhu and Indradyumna Swami. And he's saying that, surely this person will have gained some agyata sukriti. He's doing this out of the goodness of his heart, not knowing that it's devotional service. So there will be some agyata sukriti. When they got off to the plane, they looked around and saw that the man was standing at the customs with many security officials surrounding this person. And they could understand there was some problem. So it so happened that the two lines where Indradyumna Swami and Uttamashloka Prabhu were and where this man were kind of running parallel to each other. And as Uttamashloka passed this man, the man turned to Uttamashloka Prabhu and with his eyes and with some indication, he says, help me please, I need your help. So Uttamashloka says, what's happening? He says, I have carried $3,000, which is three times the limit you meant to carry into Russia. You have a maximum of 1,000. And they'll either arrest me, confiscate this money, and put me into prison. Please help. Uttamashloka did not give an answer independently. Being a very well-situated disciple, he asked his spiritual master. And Maharaj thought for a while and thought, he has done us a favor, let us repay by some gesture. And he made sure to ask if there's any implications legally if they shared the money. So they found that there was no legal complication, so they Uttamashloka went to the security guard and very confidently said, so what's the problem, officer? Oh, this man is carrying so much of money, he's not allowed to get. Oh, but this is our friend, he is carrying this money for us, what is the difficulty? Then the security officials looked a bit suspicious, as security officials generally are. But Uttamashloka is a very strong-willed, determined person, and he convinced this security person, no, we are all friends, he managed to be the one carrying it, and he just walked on. So the security officials very carefully divided the money into three, handed it to Maharaj, Uttamashloka and the man, and then left. Then when they got across, the man was very grateful, of course, and he thanked them. And then he said that, Maharaj asked, by the way, how do you get this money? And the man says, certain questions are better left unanswered. And then he disappeared mysteriously into the crowd. Then Maharaj and his servant were speaking. And they said that, just see, we received some favor from this person and we paid him back. It was just an innocent exchange. And who knows, because of the agyata sukriti that he's done, in the future he will be favorable to somebody preaching to him, and in the future he may take a book or he may take to Krishna consciousness. So it's all about making little compromises. I relate this pastime to indicate we always have to make little compromises to promote the preaching of Krishna consciousness. Of course, we have to be very balanced in not compromising our Krishna consciousness when we make such adjustments. What is the best way to keep Krishna in the center? We have to become Krishna-centric. And I'll end with this statement. If you look at the word egocentric, you are the center of all activities. You are the center of the world, the epicenter. There's also words such as geocentric, ethnocentric. It means those things are the center. So we have to become Krishna-centric. Put Krishna back where he belongs. And what's the best way to do that? Anybody knows? To feelingly and constantly chant the sweet holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Harinam Prabhu ki. So, if there's any questions or comments, I'll attempt to answer them. Gitanagari Prabhu.
Being that Prithu Maharaj has no need to perform the sacrifice because he knows the goal of the Vedas, he's Krishna conscious, and therefore he doesn't have to perform. There's no really reason for him to perform the sacrifice. So my question is how does a person know when he's reached that point? In other words, that I'm so Krishna conscious, I don't have to worry about these lower religious duties like sacrifices and stuff like that. I've reached that point. I'm beyond the need.
That's a good question. Thank you, Prabhu. In the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 18, text 54, this is answered. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasocheti Nakamshati Sama Sarveshi Bhuteshu Na Labate Param. I think I forgot that last line, I don't have it right. Anyway, the translation of that verse is somebody who is situated in transcendence on that Brahma Bhuta platform, completely, fully Krishna conscious. He doesn't hanker anymore. He is free from lamentation. And he is equally disposed to all living entities. There's a further answer given in the second chapter, which is a summary of the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter, in an answer to Arjuna's questions of what is the symptoms of a man in transcendence, Krishna describes how a man in transcendence speaks, how he sits, how he walks, how he talks, various things. This is chapter 2, text 54 to 56. This answer is given there. So these symptoms are mentioned in the Shastra, and we can gauge for ourselves how we are situated, and also how free are we from the tendency to be hankering after something that we don't have and lamenting for something that we lose. That's how we test ourselves. And also the devotees are like, in science, is a litmus test or an acid test. Same, litmus test. Litmus test is how you are reacting with the devotees. Devotees are very much like mirrors. They reflect our consciousness. And if you are well situated in your Krishna consciousness, you'll have very smooth dealings with devotees. But often we see that our dealings with devotees are not very smooth. Sometimes there's a lot of roughness there. Generally, for myself, there's 100% roughness. So there's a reason for that. And that because a devotee is described like a diamond in the rough. A diamond has many rough edges which are not smooth. And to make a diamond smooth, one process is to put the diamonds in a container like a drum and agitate them by spinning them, so by the abrasive action on one diamond on the other, they become smoothed. That's because the diamond is one of the hardest substances in existence, carbon-based compound, and therefore it is impossible to use some metal tool to shape that diamond, but if it rubs against another diamond, so like this, by the association of devotees, our rough edges become smooth. Sometimes the process is a bit painful because one thing, we may be attached to our rough edges, so when you get it removed, that's painful, and we may be causing some similar hurt to other people by our association, but eventually the end product is you will become a very smooth, shiny diamond which can be offered to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Mata. I'll end in one little Bengali quote. This was taught to me by His Grace Madhai Prabhu. So Madhai Prabhu was saying that when two Vaishnavas meet, char mile, Bis rahe karajo cha rahe jaisat kile bis rahe karajo Vaishnav se Vaishnav mile nache sat karo. So what does it mean? Char mile, your two eyes and his two eyes mile, they meet. Joshet kile, 32 plus 32, 64 teeth are showing, you smile. Bish aha karajo, bish, 10 plus his 10, palms together in pranams. And Vaishnav se Vaishnav mile nache sat karo, mane, all the hairs on your body when you meet another devotee are dancing. So this is another way to analyze Gitananda Prabhupada if you're on that platform. How do we react when you see a Vaishnava? In these ways that I just mentioned in this Bengali proverb? Or is it possible that sometimes when you see a Vaishnava, we think, him, you, her, and we kind of turn the other way, or, you know. If that tendency is within us, that we are having negative feelings in the mind against a Vaishnava, it's actually an offense. Because according to the Shastra, one must be gladdened and happy upon seeing a Vaishnava. I'll stop with this statement. One thing we should realize, we are a minority in this world. Devotees are a minority in this world. There are millions of people and trillions of living entities in the world. Vaishnavas are a limited small number. So what is to be done with that limited small number? Find more and more ways to quarrel and fight amongst each other? Why? So unnecessary. It's breaking his heart. It's breaking his heart. He said, his final instruction to us, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate for each other. So if you don't cooperate for our sake, at least cooperate for his sake. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki.